Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, here with Jackie Norman.
Thank you for listening, and we hope that you had an enjoyable 4th of July weekend. I was down in Alabama moving my sister back home, so didn't really do anything too special.
A southern 4th.
Yeah. Ursula, what was your takeaway from the 4th?
Well, I went to the doggy dock diving again, which is
cool.
Super, super cute here in Ames. Second time in a year in a row. It looks like it's going to be a tradition that is really, really adorable.
Aww.
Dogs from all over the world were there. And also, I did something else that was kind of unexpected, but super, super nice that I would recommend. We, as you probably know, Ames doesn't have fireworks on the night of 4th of July. They
really?
do it on the 3rd of July.
Okay.
The night of the 3rd. And my sister and I, we went out swimming at Peterson's Pit on July 4th. And it was dark by the time we were driving home. And we were out in the country, and Iowa's flat, so you can see a long ways. And we could see Boone was doing their fireworks, and I think it was Story City was doing their fireworks. And then you had all these people that had bought fireworks, that had taken their fireworks out of the city limits and were setting them off in the country. And so we just sat in the car, and 360 degrees around us, we could see little fireworks going
That's
off
all
over on the horizons.
That's so cool.
It was like little flowers popping up. And it was actually just a real treat.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, kind of a special way to see fireworks.
Yeah,
just kind of a landscape of fireworks with little flowers.
One year, my family went to Wisconsin, and we got a house on the lake, and they shot them off the lake. And that was one of the best experiences of my life, was seeing them over the lake. So
yeah, one of the perks of all this rain was that there were these pools of water, which unfortunately were flooding a cornfield, but the fireworks
nice
from the distance looked reflected in the lake.
That's super cool.
So anyway, so that's a tip for the 4th of July. If you're an Ames resident, get your 4th of July fireworks by driving out in the country on the night of 4th of July, and just look around you and you'll see 360 degrees of little fireworks.
That's awesome.
So anyway, just a suggestion.
Well, Ursula, before we get started, please let's do the news. As far as weather goes, the break from wet conditions will continue for a few more days, helping us dry out until Wednesday night when things should cloud up again. Temperatures should be in the high 80s during the days of this week and in the high 60s at night. But don't put away your umbrella yet. So coming on Thursday, we are looking again at the possibility of rain and thunderstorms with the likelihood increasing on Thursday night and pretty much staying that way through the weekend.
Okay, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Farm flooding continues to be a concern in the area. Corn crops generally handle wet conditions better than soybeans, but neither crop can be completely saturated or flooded for more than about 5 days. Excessively wet, warm soils increase the potential for fertilizer loss, and corn in wet fields may drown the roots. They have drowned roots. Soybeans like having wet feet even less than corn, and we're beginning to see some soybean yellow fields where beans will be smaller and much more susceptible to diseases. Former Iowa Governor Robert Ray died yesterday, Sunday, after living with Parkinson's disease for several years. He was 89. Ray established the Department of Transportation and what eventually would become the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. And under Ray's direction, the Iowa legislature gradually transferred large portions of the costs of schools from local property taxes to statewide income taxes, and collective bargaining for state employees started under Ray. He also reorganized the state's judicial system to bring all courts under the state control, ending the system of municipal and county-run courts. So things were a little bit different under Ray in terms of collective bargaining.
Yeah, sounds good.
Ray was governor for 14 years without facing any serious challenges. and the popular governor's was known for empathy and humanitarian, as many of you, I'm sure, remember yourselves. Ray reached out to help thousands of refugees from the Vietnam War and other conflicts, helping them to relocate in Iowa. When challenged on this, Ray delivered a speech at a St. Louis church saying, "Do not tell me how Christian you are. Show me." The Iowa Department of Corrections is considering using inmates to build low-income housing. Prison labor is an expanding industry. However, the idea has stalled so far at the Iowa legislature. The Department of Corrections said it believes such a program would help alleviate Iowa's shortage of skilled workers, as well as affordable housing, while providing job training for inmates. Also provides inexpensive labor. The Des Moines Register reported on how United Healthcare, with the state of Iowa hired to manage Medicare, is trying to cut home health care to a Fontenelle, Iowa resident who is paralyzed from the neck down. Fontenelle is in Adair County, southwest of Des Moines. Last year, United Healthcare tried to drastically reduce the amount of in-home aid Jamie Campbell could receive for help with everyday tasks such as bathing, dressing, doing laundry, preparing meals, and taking medicine because he is paralyzed from the neck down. Campbell argued that this would jeopardize his hard-won independence if he lost the amount of in-home aid that the United Healthcare wanted to cut back. And an administrative law judge ordered United Healthcare to continue covering his care, writing in a decision last summer that the evidence was, quote, overwhelmingly in Campbell's favor. Now the health insurance company is attempting once again to cut back services. The Iowa's 2016 shift to privately run Medicaid has been intensely controversial. According to a quarterly report by Iowa's long-term care ombudsman, Campbell is among scores of disabled Iowans who have complained about Medicaid managed care companies trying to cut the assistance they receive at home and who find themselves with endless process of having to appeal this. Meanwhile, supporters of the privatization of Medicaid say it is bringing more efficient, effective care that will make the Medicaid program more financially sustainable in the long run. Stephanie Clifford, otherwise known as Stormy Daniels, is currently performing at Big Earl's Gold Mine, an all-nude strip club just north of Des Moines. Daniels is the adult film actress who revealed that she was paid $130,000 to stay quiet about an alleged sexual affair with President Donald Trump before his term in office. Big Earl's Gold Mine owner Melvin Bryson said Daniels is the most famous person to ever have performed at the club. Daniels is on a cross-country Make America Horny Again tour. Apparently, her shows are bringing out audiences that include both Trump supporters and Trump opponents, although Bryson says ultimately people are there to see a strip show. Iowa's political leaders cheered the resignation of embattled U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt on Thursday. Republican U.S. Representative David Young said, quote, his actions as EPA administrator not only raised serious ethical concerns, but hurt Iowa farmers by recklessly undercutting the renewable fuel standard, unquote. Senator Chuck Grassley said Trump, quote, made the right decision. Administrator Pruitt's ethical scandals and his undermining of the president's commitment to biofuels and Midwest farmers were distracting from the agency's otherwise strong progress to free the nation of burdensome and harmful government regulations, unquote. Governor Kim Reynolds said in a statement, quote, today's resignation from Administrator Pruitt must result in new EPA leadership that will honor the president's commitment to the renewable fuel standards. I will continue to fight for a robust renewable fuel standard by working with our federal delegation in Washington, D.C. to hold the administration to this promise. Iowa is the nation's largest ethanol and biodiesel producer. And speaking of ethanol, Eric Branstad, the son of Terry Branstad, former Iowa governor and U.S. ambassador to China, recently was cited for using his political ties to President Donald Trump to promote his public relations firm in China, according to the Wall Street Journal. in 2016 Iowa caucus campaign. Eric, in the 2016 Iowa caucus campaign for president, Eric was the state director for Iowa's Renewable Future, an advocacy group that pressed presidential candidates to support ethanol and biofuels. He became the state director for Trump's campaign in 2016 presidential election, and he subsequently joined the Trump administration as senior White House advisor to U.S. Department of Commerce. The Wall Street Journal said that Eric Branstad highlighted his personal relationship with Trump and his plans to open an office in China during travels to Shanghai and Beijing this past week while representing Mercury Public Affairs, LLC, a Washington-based communications firm he joined in February after leaving U.S. government service. During a presentation he gave at a seminar for lawyers, bankers, and advisors, he reportedly said that Mercury soon plans to open an office in China. And in addition, this is where things got a little bit thorny. According to the Des Moines Register, Mercury, a division of Omnicom Group Incorporated, recently began representing a Chinese telecommunications equipment maker known as ZTE Corporation, as reported in the Wall Street Journal. On May 13th, Trump set into motion a reversal of a Commerce Department prohibition on ZTE's access to U.S. suppliers because of allegations the company broke U.S. law. Trump, in a tweet, cited a determination to work with Z on ZTE, quote, back to business, to get ZTE back in business fast. Mercury subsequently said in a filing with the U.S. Justice Department, as of May 14th, it would act as a subcontractor to the global law firm Hogan Lovells on matters involving ZTE at a rate of $75,000 a month for 3 months. In June, the U.S. Senate voted to reinstate the ZTE ban, the journal reported. So that's just a little inside look into the ins and outs of business and government. Our thanks to the Des Moines Register for providing some of these stories.
When you see a gentleman be around a lady be buzzing, just count to ten, then count again. There's sure to be an even dozen. A multiplication, that's the name of the game. And each generation, they play the same. Now there was two butterflies casting their eyes both in the same direction. You'd never forget that one little yes could start a butterfly collection. A multiplication, that's the name of the game. And each generation, they play the same. Let me tell you now, I'll say one and one is five. You can call me silly goat, but you take two minks, add two winks. You got a one mink coat. When a girl gets coy in front of a boy, after three or four dances, you can just bet she'll play hard to get to multiply her chances. A multiplication, that's the name of the game. Any generation, you know to play the same. Hear me talking to your mother nature's a clever girl. She relies on habits. You take two hairs with no care. Pretty soon you got a room full of rabbits. Parakeets in between tweets sometimes get too quiet. Oh, but to have no fear, cause soon you'll hear a parakeet's riot, just try it. A multiplication, that's the name of the game. And every generation, you know they play the same. Yeah, it's multiplication, that's the name of the game. And each generation, they play the same. They better.
This is Maggie Westfold, KHOI Community Radio. Welcome to Points to Ponder, a newer feature on KHOI, thanks to intern Saquon Gatlin. I'm joining Saquon with his new effort with some thoughts today on the timely topic of rabbits. This time of year, we who love our yards, our blooming plants, vegetable gardens, and herbs growing conveniently just off the patio or within steps of the back door, we pretty much agree that those cottontail characters are nothing short of a blamed nuisance. Cute, maybe, as fluffy little bunnies bouncing here, leaping there, around my backyard, but they cease to fit the cute category when I glance out the window only to see one, once again, devouring my growing greens, whether flowers, vegetable, or herb. In my wonderful childhood on the farm, I was awestruck at randomly coming upon a nest of pinkish furry babies, all snuggled up. We let them be, as Mom instructed, to the care of their own mommy. I don't recall my mom ever complaining about rabbits eating her flowers or vegetables, but they surely did. She had a huge garden each year where she went in early morning hours to beat the heat and find solace from kiddos. Perhaps on the farm there was so much to choose from, rabbits were not the issue that they are for today's townies who work so hard to have pretty flowers and vegetables and herbs. One only needs to mention rabbits in a group setting at this time of year to elicit all shades of commentary from those who either love the cute little critters or detest the varmints. There's typically no gray area where rabbits are concerned. They do indeed multiply seemingly as we sleep, so there are plenty to either love or not love, depending on your particular view from your patio chair. The tales of never-ending cottontails will surely be talked about over and over again and long after I'm gone from this earth. I doubt anyone will ever come up with the perfect solution to whether we should love them or leave them alone as they feast at the bunny buffets we prepare, seemingly for their nourishment. Before I end my points to ponder about bunnies with a poem I wrote a dozen years ago about my own bunny buffet experience, I'd like to share a little bunny-related story from our Duff Avenue neighborhood from back when we and many families were raising their young kiddos in our block. Henry, about three, a toddler, from up the block, began shadowing my husband Steve around the yard as Steve would be out working. Henry had an adorable speech impediment, typical of his age, which caused him to pronounce his R's as W's. Rabbit became wabbit, as if Elmer Fudd had spoken. And Henry often became so absorbed in watching and asking questions and did not want to leave Steve's side that he would forget to run back home and use the bathroom, thus often would display a bit of a wet spot across the front of his little shorts. Dampish shorts never seemed to bother little Henry, not one bit. One evening, as we sat on our front steps relaxing after supper, Henry came up the walk, nuzzling a baby bunny. Our kids and other kids gathered round as Henry showed off his newfound fuzzy pet. Someone suggested that Henry put his bunny down to hop around. Henry's face went all horrified-looking as he glanced at Steve. "Mr. Westfold, you don't like little wabbits. I heard you stew him away in your yard. I'm not putting him down because you might make wabbit stew out of him." And here's my poem, Attention Deficit Disorder. Standing at my sink window, I spot another danged rabbit as my hands dive into warm, sudsy dishwater. Fish for the one fork left, then on to laundry before I wash, pare, chop veggies for the stir fry later on. My eye catches him skittering across the lawn, eating my calendulas again. I wrap dishwater hands briskly on sink's edge, down three stairs, out the side door, round the back to shoo away that varmint. Oh, look, the impatiens I potted for the patio, about to bloom, the ones I bought half price, no tag, just for fun, the anticipation of surprise blooms. Looks like we'll have a petal pink. Across the patio in the ratty old rocker, my gorgeous fuchsia looks thirsty again. I get the hose, give the other potted pretties a sip too, then watch a gentle stream wash huge blue-green hosta leaves. Where has summer gone? I do love fall, but summer's flown right by, more so than ever this year. Oh, good morning, Tim. Your petunias are sure pretty. Our neighbor weeds meticulously once again in his flower bed alongside our drive. We whine in harmony over heat and weeds as I turn and see one peeking up through my creeping flocks. I reach, grasp uproot, then spy yet another tainting the beauty of my pink and yellow snapdragons. You weren't there yesterday, you undesirables. Danged heat spurs you onward, upward. Oh, that we could hybridize a gorgeous bloom to grow like you. One weed leads to the next, and I am around front, uprooting wayward greens from sidewalk crevices. Messiness tossed here and there, I pick up the hose and jet spray my unsightly tossings. Oops, there's the phone. Around the house, back in the side door, grab the handrail, bound up a couple steps. Where's that phone this time? I pass my now cool dishwater an hour after I went out the door after that danged rabbit. This has been Maggie Westfold with Points to Ponder. I recently talked with our station manager, Ursula Rudenberg, about the topic of rabbits, and she commented that she's somewhat amazed at how brazen bunnies are in Ames, that they lie around Central Campus like sunbathers at the beach. What's your perspective on the bunny population in Ames or your area? We would love to have you call in at KHOI and let us know how you feel. Please call 515-232-0365 or email us at khoiradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, Maggie. And as you may know, if listening to this, if you drive around, lots of bunny cuteness going on, baby bunnies zipping across the road, right?
Yeah, there are.
Lots of bunny cuteness. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am one of your hosts for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Jackie Norman. You may or may not know this, but Jackie is interning here at KHOI. She's a student at the Greenlee School of Journalism and actually has been silently with us for quite a few months. She's been running the soundboard for Local Talk for at least 4 months now. And so you hear her work, but you don't hear Jackie usually. But one of the great things about having interns at KHOI is that it brings student life experience up close and personal, and something which is something really important and meaningful in a town like Ames. So it's good to have you heard on Local Talk, Jackie, and an issue you have raised as a student about the process of building one's future is the issue of discouragement. Can you explain?
Yeah, sure. So I found just going through college, coming in undecided and as a design student, is that a lot of students, they either come in with a major and then decide automatically, like, oh, this wasn't the right major, like, I got to switch it. Or they come in undecided and then just switch around majors, like, their whole entire first year, second year, or even throughout their whole entire college experience. And that kind of, they don't necessarily, some people make educated decisions that this wasn't the right major for them. But a lot of times students will think, oh, this isn't the right thing by just one bad experience. And I kind of consider that prematurely dropping a major. And it's kind of an issue. It's just one bad experience that can set someone off, and then they decide to totally turn against the major. I know going in as a undecided design student, I wasn't totally sure on the whole design. And after taking the core classes there, I was definitely discouraged by that. So I definitely decided to drop that major. And my mom always, to this day, she says that you should have just stuck it out. It would have gotten better. You don't know, but I didn't think I could do it. So I decided to bring in another student today that actually decided to stick out with his major as a mechanical engineer. And just to, even when he found roadblocks, he decided to keep pushing with the major. So we'll talk with him and figure out what made him decide to stick with mechanical engineer. So I'd like to introduce Aaron Kirch. He's a junior now in mechanical engineering. How are you doing, Aaron?
Welcome, Aaron.
Hi.
All right. So we'll just start off with how did you decide to pick mechanical engineering?
So I've always been interested in design, I suppose. When I was really young, I thought I wanted to be an architect just because they were the only people I knew that designed things for a living. I really liked blueprints and everything. But when I was younger, I also really would build things just about every day. I had a huge stash of cardboard in my closet. My mom once went through and cleared like half of it out one day, and I didn't even notice because there was that much.
Cardboard?
Cardboard. I would try to build something different out of cardboard every day because we'd always have boxes and duct tape, and it was just easy to put something together. So, you know, forts, that sort of thing. And then moving into high school, I did a lot of robotics. And part of the program, it's FIRST Robotics. There's a team actually here in Ames. And part of that program is that you work under the mentorship of adults. Usually some of them are engineers in industry. There are some non-engineering roles, which are very important to the organization as well. But that was my first exposure really to an actual like engineer. And that's pretty much when I knew that's what I wanted to do.
All right. And so did you ever, during your college experience, feel like this wasn't the right major for you?
Yeah, I definitely had those feelings. It's usually when I would hit tough spots in classes, especially math and then my mechanics classes. Engineering mechanics is very math-based. It's basically applied maths. And those classes put up challenges for me. Even as late as this summer, I was finishing up my engineering mechanics classes with dynamics, and I still had a lot of struggles with that. But a lot of the doubts, I guess, came from thinking that I couldn't do it or that it wasn't for me or that just like I wasn't good enough for the stuff, like the other people weren't struggling because they were just having an easier time or something. But I don't really think that's the case anymore. I wasn't working too closely with my peers before, and I'm doing that more now and kind of understanding that everyone, you know, they all struggle with classes for sure. But the thing that sets them apart, what's making other people successful where I wasn't, is that they're just putting more time into homework and studying, and they're finding ways to study that work for them, I guess. Where I come at it from is I just try to find a way to like love the work in every class I do, because I find that where I started getting detached and where people I've seen who left the major started to get detached is where they start to say, well, this isn't even like important. Why am I even learning this? This is tough. I can't even do it. It's those sort of thoughts that get discouraging. And I've always found that just like continuing to promise myself that this is important, it will pay off if I just take the time to learn it. That's always how I've gotten through those tough spots, I guess.
So there's moments when it all feels pointless.
Yeah, there are moments when you think you're prepared for an exam and then you totally bomb it, and you start to, you know, I've started to doubt if anything that I was doing was meaningful, I guess.
Yeah, I remember in high school, like just math classes, and like you just wonder, like, what's the point of this? When am I ever going to use this, you know? And just feeling that about a major would be tough. What made you decide to stick with it instead of switching?
Well, for me, it's a matter of looking at the other options, and engineering is just the only good choice for me. There's other places I can go, but they're so much less focused on science that I think that engineering is the only logical place that I should end up. It's the career that I think I'm most likely to enjoy and find somewhere that I can enjoy. I guess there are other like similar but non-engineering fields that are still highly technical that I've looked at, industrial technology and like supply chain sort of stuff. Those are a little bit more business focused, and I just don't like the idea of losing the science side of it. I really do enjoy science. It's just the math gets in the way for me sometimes.
All right, and I've talked with you a couple of times, and you had an internship last summer and one this summer. Last summer was with Woodward, and this summer is with Danfoss. Can you basically describe like an overview of both of those internships?
Sure. So Woodward, at the Radford location where I was, they specialize in making fuel controls for aircraft. And so when I was working there, I was interning directly with their fuel metering unit department. So they were kind of the core engineering department for that facility. So I was pretty much put into the thick of it, working on finalizing the production stuff. So actually getting the product from design to put in for full production, which I believe I was they were just starting to produce it when I got there, and it's getting to be more in full swing now. But what I was mostly working on was like doing a bunch of technical manuals, revising technical drawings, and then checking between internal and external standards to make sure they were identical pretty much. And there was some learning opportunity there for sure, where you had to, for example, I had to evaluate if changing dimensions would make a part impossible to fit into the existing housing that we have, for example. And that's actually a really important skill that I never knew even existed. It's called stack-ups, where you take all the tolerances of your parts and you add them together to say, worst-case scenario, how big is this thing looking? And then Danfoss, they specialize in – well, Danfoss Power Solutions, which is where I work, they specialize in hydraulics for mobile equipment, usually construction and agriculture is what they specialize in. And so I'm actually working with the product application engineering team there. I'm the PAE intern. And
what's PAE?
What they do is they are supporting products that are already out on the field. So once we've sold a number of pumps to a customer and anything changes on those pumps, we're responsible for communicating that, getting feedback. They, whenever a huge technical issue comes up and it's something that takes a lot of specialized knowledge, that comes back to us. They take care of customer changes. If a customer wants to request a change to something, they also help to try to implement that. It's mostly support for things that already are made and in the field, which is pretty much the opposite side of the business what I was on last summer. So it's been interesting to see, you know, all sorts of different places that you can use an engineering degree.
Yeah, so internships are the one of the best ways to figure out if a major or where you're heading is like where you want to go, because you get firsthand knowledge and you get to experience what it's going to end up being like and if it's going to be worth it. And we've talked before and you've told me that you found another internship that deals with architectural engineering, if I'm right?
Yeah, so it's not exactly when you say architectural engineering, that makes it sound like I'm going to be working on the structure itself. I believe civil engineers tend to do that. What a mechanical engineer would do at a architecture firm is mostly working on the mechanical systems in a building. So your heating and cooling systems, some plumbing, if your plumbing is particularly complex, I suppose. And then things like, I believe they might help out with like an attuned mass damper if you have a really large building and you need to work on stabilizing that. Oh, elevators, that sort of thing. And certainly with some of those products like an elevator, they're probably going to call on a company to install that. But there's a lot of mechanical considerations to make in a building beyond the structure. And so that's kind of where a mechanical engineer comes in, at least to my understanding. And that's just appealing to me. I've always, for some reason, I've always enjoyed working on the side, the little projects to support the bigger picture than working on the mainstream of whatever the work is, I guess. I don't know why that is, though.
So, Erin, at the beginning of her conversation with you, Jackie was saying that, you know, staying motivated and feeling a sense of purpose is an issue, especially in a complex field like engineering where you have to do a lot of math. Do you find that the internship made a big difference in terms of you feeling that there was meaning to a degree like this?
Yeah, it puts everything you're learning into a lot of context, for sure. When I came back the last year after my first internship experience and I was able to start making connections between what I had been doing the past summer and what I'm learning in classes, that was a huge impact, really, and it made it a lot easier to learn, and I was able to learn the material a lot more deeply after that.
Are these internships required for your education, or is this an optional thing?
Technically, they're optional, but practically, they're required. You, as an engineer, I won't really be considered experienced until I have 5 years of experience in the field. Mm-hmm. So even when I get a degree and I'm getting hired, I'll still be, you know, inexperienced, and they'll have to work on training me on the job. So it's really valuable to get some experience right away, just because of how much it helps your career prospects. If you talk to the engineering advisors, they could give you exact numbers. Mm-hmm. But from what I understand, if you don't pursue internships, you're far less likely to end up getting into the industry right after undergraduate. If you're going to graduate school, maybe focus more on research, because then you don't have to worry as much about landing a job right after college. But mm-hmm. it's very career focused here at Iowa State. They care a lot about getting the undergraduates into the field once they get that bachelor degree. And so they've always really heavily pushed internships here.
And are there a lot of options for internships for engineers right in this area?
Yeah, there are quite a few around this area, especially with Des Moines, depending on your industry. So I know particularly in Danfoss here, I was able to look at Danfoss. I was able to look at, I think Barilla is also nearby. They offer internships. And then there's plenty of places down in Des Moines to look at. And then there are even there's Craig Tools is even near here. I was a woodworker, you know, for a long time. I wanted to get back into it. They made woodworking jigs, for example. So that was mm-hmm. a cool one to find out about. I believe there's a company just south of Des Moines that makes concrete mixer trucks, but they like mix the concrete on site. I forget what the name of that company is, but those were a couple interesting opportunities that were in this area. And certainly when you look at Des Moines, there's plenty right here in Iowa.
All right. Well, we've unfortunately ran out of time. So we've been speaking with Aaron Kirsch, who is an engineering intern at Danfoss. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and experience with us, Aaron. And is there any last words that you want to say?
No, not particularly. I guess I'd just say, you know, if you're struggling with any class, just try to find why the thing you're learning is important, because I'm pretty sure it is. You just have to find that.
Have you felt, Jackie, that you're an intern as well right now.
Yeah.
Have you found that working here at KHOI has helped put your journalism degree in perspective?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely helped me a lot. So we don't have as many radio or broadcast-based classes. Mm-hmm. But I do remember, right, we do have classes where you write for broadcasts, and I feel like that's definitely helped me out a little bit, especially last 2 weeks ago when I had to write my own script. That helped me out a little bit. But yeah, it's definitely helped me out. It's definitely helped me see that this is definitely worth all the classes. Mm-hmm. It's definitely something I want to go on to. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Aaron, for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for this hour, here with Jackie Norman. Also with us now are Josie Stalin from MICA, Mid-Iowa Community Action, and Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Services Coordinator. Josie, I asked you to come in because even though the water's receding, and let's hope that the rains at the end of this week do not cause more flooding, we'll have to ask you guys your opinion about that, especially you, Keith. But there's always an aftermath to flooding for many people. I know this well. We still, our backyard is still full of stuff that's drying out still. And I know that my elderly father would have had a lot of problems if he didn't have two of his daughters living with him right now, because we had about 3 inches of water in our basement. So I wanted to just follow up a little bit with, you know, the aftermath of the flood. And what kind of request did you actually end up getting? I guess I'm asking both you, Keith, and Josie. Like here, we've heard the stories about Polk County, Ankeny, what happened there, and some of the tragic events. How was Central Iowa, I mean, Story County and Boone County? I mean, I guess you work more in Story County. What kind of responses or requests did you get for help?
Well, we always start off with trying to do damage assessment to get an idea on how badly things had happened. It was immediate. During the actual first round of storms, I was called out to one house. The initial call was there's 4 inches of water outside or in the basement, and there's 4 feet of water outside. And finally, a door let loose, and that facility was leveled out, and there was 4 feet of water down in the basement. We could see that there was all sorts of damages.
This was not a house. This was a house. This was a house.
That had it. And it was a house that had a lot of living area.
In Story County.
In Story County, down in the lower level. So greatly impacted. And then you hear the stories of basements. And what do you have in your basement typically? You've got your water heater. You have your furnace. And you have a lot of other stuff. And more of us are using it as a living areas. So these flash floods are insidious in that you don't see the damages, you don't have the pictures of the houses with water up to the doorknobs, but you know it's there. So we opened up, we had an app that you can now go to our website, Story County EMA, Story County Iowa /EMA, and it is a way that people can self-report damages. And we started getting enough damages that we could see that there would be a need for people to have assistance. And that's where we partner with MICA. It is a part of Iowa code that that there will be damage assistance for folks. There's two programs, individual assistance, and then there's damage or disaster case management. And so, those are given over to MICA here in Story County.
So, Josie, what exactly is MICA?
So MICA is Mid-Iowa Community Action. We are a community action program that serve our five core counties in Central Iowa, one of them being Story County. And we routinely work with individuals in the income guideline for individual assistance, so it just is a good fit that we administer that program.
Are you a government agency or are you a private nonprofit?
We are a nonprofit agency. Mm-hmm. We have a variety of different programs with a variety of different funding. Some of those are federal, some are state, some are local.
But some of this emergency money is channeled through you.
Yes, so we have the contract to administer this program for the state.
Okay, so what kind of help is available?
Sure, so we have, like Keith mentioned, there are two different pieces to the assistance that was activated by the governor's proclamation. One is the Iowa Individual Assistance Grant Program. So that caps for individuals at 200% of poverty and below. So for an example, a household of three could not make more than $41,560, just to give you an idea of the income guideline for that. And that's a program that basically individuals could apply for. It's a voucher or reimbursement program to help offset the cost of items damaged as a result of the disaster and assistance flooding. And it can also, in certain circumstances, be used for structural repairs as well.
So if one qualifies for this, what does one do to access the money?
They would need to contact our office, and I should also mention the other piece of the other program that is activated is our disaster case management as well. So I am the disaster case manager, and would you like me to talk a little bit about disaster case management right now as well?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that really takes a holistic view of a family and their needs following a disaster event. Myself as the case manager would work with you to assess what your immediate needs are and then help you to develop a disaster recovery plan. So that plan would serve to identify what your goals are, action steps to achieve those goals, and a timetable to kind of help you on your way back to life as normal.
So in other words, if you kind of have this big mess in your house and you kind of don't know where to start.
Yes, you would meet with me and we'd kind of take it from the ground level, decide, you know, what your next steps are, what actions you need to take.
How to sort it out.
Yeah, how to sort it out. And in some cases, part of your action plan might be, if you're income eligible, to apply for the grant program.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of how it all works together. And also, as a case manager, I would serve as your advocate, help connect you to what resources are available to you, like the individual assistance grant program. And then through your involvement in case management, I could also connect you to any new resources if and when they become available.
So that's a great service. Yeah.
And a great thing to make sure people know is, whereas the individual assistance program is capped on your income, case management is open to anybody.
So anybody who feels overwhelmed by the flood or any other emergency, right?
Well, it's got to be directly related to
flooding.
Well, to the proclamation.
To the proclamation.
Yes.
Okay.
You have to be living in Story County and have unmet needs related to the disaster.
Okay. But that is in effect.
Yes.
So if you are feeling overwhelmed, this is a service you can use. How do you access the service?
Sure. So you can access that service, both services, by contacting our office here in Ames. And I can give the phone number. It's 515-956-3333. And you can
say that number again.
It's 515-956-3333. And then you can just ask for me. My name is Josie Stalen, and I'll be able to we'll initially just talk. I'll get a feel for what you're going through, what your needs are, and take it from there.
Sounds great. Keith, your job is to anticipate problems. lucky you. We do have rain predicted again for this coming weekend for quite a few days. What are your thoughts? Are they concerned about more flooding happening?
Sure. This whole summertime, we've had a pattern of rain being very, very concentrated over a small amount of area. We call it training, where the storms will develop and die in a very small area. And we need rain. I mean, we need a good, even amount of rain. But when you get, for instance, over about 6 days, the Kelly area got somewhere between 10 to 15 inches of rain. Down in Ankeny, again, 7-plus inches of rain in one night. There's no way that we would want to design our infrastructure to be able to handle that kind, because we would rarely use it. But now we're going to watch it. We encourage everybody to watch the weather, and if they see that kind of pattern developing around them in their area, to be aware that flash flooding is likely to start.
So when you say see that area developing, that sounds very scientific. What are you really saying? If it keeps raining,
watch the news, and if it keeps raining, and if they keep saying it's 2 inches, it's now 3 inches, it's now 4 inches. First thing to do is make sure that your sump pumps and all that sort of stuff is working. Next thing is, don't go out if you don't have to. We saw so many people get trapped by the rising waters down in Ankeny that if they weren't out and about, they may not have had that happen. Or if you're in your house, move your car to higher ground, especially if you're in an apartment complex or something like that. Be aware of the weather and take steps to make sure that you're safe and that you protect your property.
Okay, thank you. So what I hear between the lines is yes, there is still some concern about the coming rains because the ground is saturated.
Exactly.
And the rain is still coming. So
always
so something to think
it.
About.
Yep.
Thank you. And Josie, thank you for your information. What is the website for MICA?
Our website is www.micaonline.org. So that's MICAonline.org.
And again, it is in effect that there are services available for counseling on helping with these things.
Yes, and I do want to mention that the case management closes. It's a time limited program, so that closes December. So you'll want to get enrolled sooner rather than later.
Sooner than later.
And then also, it's important to note that the grant program applications are due by August 6th. So there is a time limit that's going to creep up on us before we know it. So you do want to get those applications in before that time.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. And Keith, let's talk about another situation just around the corner that you're getting ready for as the emergency management coordinator. This is essentially something positive. How are you planning for RAGBRAI?
Yeah, we're trying to make sure that all of the different organizations are coming together and being prepared for RAGBRAI. It seems simple. They're going to come in E57, go on up into Ames, and then go on out Lincoln Way. But when you look at all of the different agencies and interfaces between those agencies that are going to be involved in those 2 days, we're trying to get everybody together so we all know what's going to happen at what time, and that we have coverage so that hopefully RAGBRAI is one of the biggest non-events that happens for emergency management. But if something does happen,
there's
we have the ability to expand out or contract back to handle any sort of a situation that might occur.
So what type of planning does actually happen for something like this?
Well,
who's involved?
We had 21 different agencies come into my emergency operations center about 3-4 weeks ago, and we started walking through from the moment that they leave Boone County, and even some of our medical response goes into Boone County, so we're going to have to interface with Boone County law enforcement, medical. Then they come into Story County, and then the transition on up into Ames. It required us to have 21 agencies. First thing right out of the gate, we started to realize that there's a possibility they'll be doing construction on Highway 69 in South Ames at the same time that we're doing RAGBRAI. So we're going to have Highway 69 potentially closed off, and we're not going to be allowing traffic to flow north on R38 into Ames. So we've started planning for that. We developed 2 different diversion routes around that area, and we're going to have that set in our mind so we can get that out to the public and try and give them the opportunity to get around that those kind of detours as quickly and easily as possible. Other stuff that we're considering is what if severe weather happens while this is occurring, and making sure that each agency knows I'm responsible for this section of RAGBRAI here in Story County. So we talk about the medical response, which ambulances are going to cover what sections, how are we going to communicate across the different radio systems. Both Boone and Marshall County use a different, completely different radio system than we do. So we're going through all of the different radio frequencies and making sure that we can best come together if there is any sort of an event that occurs, incident that occurs during RAGBRAI.
So if something does happen, God forbid, that you're planning so there won't be a scenario that everybody's going to go, well, what do we do now? Right?
Exactly. We're putting together what we call an incident action plan that has the communications section. It has taskings for each law enforcement is going to take care of the traffic control, and they're going to also be responsible for making the weather call. If there's a need to notify the folks that there's severe weather coming. Obviously, medical is going to have it. If there is a medical event, who's going to take it? Because RAGBRAI, inside of RAGBRAI, has up to 4 different ambulances that travel along with it. So they take care of RAGBRAI, but you never know when either they'll run out of ambulances or we have a larger scale issue and we need to integrate the 2 of them. So we're figuring out how that's going to work. We're letting Ames and Iowa State do a lot of the work internal to them because they have already got good lash up amongst them. We're primarily working in the more rural areas and again, on the fringes on the county line. So we're going through all of that sort of stuff. It seems like it's a long ways away, but it's not, and we're working hard to try and get all of this stuff lined up.
And the devil's in the details, right?
It is.
Yeah.
For instance,
it's not having the right phone number or something like that, right?
You're exactly right. Because we use different numbers on the radio, who's going to be in charge? We'll have that all on the paper so people can review it at the beginning of the day's activities. Know that if we do need to build to what we call a unified command with medical coming together with the law enforcement, these 2 people are at the top of both those chains. They'll try and match up in a place so that they can work together and draw upon all the resources in Story County and if need be, outside of Story County. We're going to ask the other agencies that aren't involved, how many people are you going to have available should we need to go to a need more people to come on into this and have it all lined up. And again, hopefully it's a lot of work for no reason whatsoever. Those are always the best days for me.
Well, a frustrating job. You do all this work and then hope that none of it ever shows.
I'm always thrilled. If you always look for the worst case situation, anything right. less than that is a good day.
Yeah, well, people like you are really important, Keith, because there is always that moment where something does go wrong, and the support is there, and it's magic.
And
when the support is there, when it's needed,
we're drawing off of some of the lessons that we've learned with like the I-35 accidents and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're incorporating them into what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. We've been talking with Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Management Coordinator, about the planning for RAGBRAI, and Josie Stalin has been here from MICA to talk about services that are available in the aftermath of the flooding and potential future flooding, hopefully not. Any last words, guys?
Be safe.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming. And Jackie, let's close the show. I think we're running out of time.
All right, sounds good. So you have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I have been one of your hosts for today. Thank you for listening. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI 89.1 FM. Also, remember, you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
And stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m., Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. And as Keith says, be safe. And we'll see you again on the radio.